And welcome back to the Team Effort. I am Ed Cavalier. With me, as always, is our producer, fact-checker, and hemp granola provider, Jay. Hello, Jay.
Hello there.
Load that theme music and fire at will, hombre.
I like your pants around
No.
What?
Not that. Real theme music. Oh, my God. There we go. Our first guest today in the Team Effort has 222s in his shoes. Grab yourself an O-bike or a secondhand Segway. Take a fistful of your hard-earned into your nearest bricks and mortar bookshop and buy three copies of his latest tome, Deadly Kerfuffle. It's the best New Zealand-inspired Melbourne-based comedy terrorist novel you will read. Well, at least until Dan Brown does one. Hey, hey, yes. Listen to me. I'm talking to you. Why are you still listening to this nonsense while you're in the gym wailing on your pecs? Put down the weights, get out there and get to a bookshop and grab yourself Deadly Kerfuffle, written by my type of guy, Mr. Tony Martin.
That's me. I've got cravat, pipe and slippers ready to go.
Full author mode. Our second guest has just finished becoming a real romper stomper kind of guy. A trailer we watched just before this to put us in the mood for comedy with... with the huge amounts of premium Batman and Robin memorabilia landing on his doorstep every darn day, it's a miracle we've managed to lure him into the studio. Even as I say this, there are limited edition Lego Batwings piling up on the stoop of Casa del Hume. Actor, writer, voiceover artist and JFK expert, he's drinking a Coke in the vestibule as we speak. Get back and to the left. Yes, back and to the left. It's Lachie Hume.
Thank you very much.
Lachlan Hume. Now, are we going to do any JFK today? We said we wouldn't.
No, we will. We will because of the files release. So we'll have a chat.
Oh, good. Now,
I'll give you an update.
There are, how long have you got? How long is that tape, yeah. Jay?
Comedy Central.
But there's someone else here, isn't there?
Our final guest today looks like he should be on a catwalk, but acts like he should be in a safe house. He's doing this for his homies slinging things and for the ladies who see them rims spin and grin. 61% of the population think he's doing a great job on Neighbours. The others just have no idea he's on there at all. Got a deal? He'll do it. Got a can of fake tan? He'll share it. Got an Instagram photo of yourself in varying stages of undress? He'll like it. It's the future BRW Rich Lister. Hold my beer. It's Ash Williams.
Thank you, Eddie.
Whoa. Ashley.
Good to be here. Fired up.
Up top, yes. Mate. Up top.
Boom. Let's do a high five, Tone.
No, yes, I'll have a crack at one of those.
Now, Tone, that is officially the third high five you've received. The other two, of course, being here with Ash.
Very tentative. Now, can I just say, Ed, it's been, what, a couple of months since we did one of these. And we got all this publicity.
I know, mate.
This was like the hot podcast.
Yeah, it was going mad.
And then you've gone and had children.
Yeah, had a child.
And
yeah.
So we've been unavailable.
We have. That's why I'm so happy to have the podcast back, the Team Effort back together. Our thoughts are with Lawrence Mooney, who couldn't be with us today because he said to me, I've got a fucking cashy. Oh. Today, the Team Effort is about the best ever.
Doing what?
The best ever. We are here to help you lead a better life through the example set by these towering individuals. So hold on to your hierarchies and give it the old Edmund Hillary treatment as we really give the summit a good time. Lachlan, the first question is to you.
Yes.
Any new Batman stuff arrived?
I actually have some stuff for your child.
Wow. What?
Yes.
On you?
Not on me. I'm waiting for. I've got a t-shirt coming for your little boy Arnie.
Oh.
But we have some Batman pajamas for him, and also some leather Batman booties for him too.
It'll be the first piece of leather clothing he owns. Tony, what leather do you?
And not the last if Ash has anything to do with it.
Tony, what leather products do you have for my child?
I don't have any lederhosen for the youngin, but I have to say I've been receiving gifts from Lachie Hume in the Batman department as well. I received a replica of the bust that the Adam West TV Batman would swing open to press the button.
Shakespeare bust.
You know, to make the book cases open.
To get down to the Batcave.
Batcave. And of course, going down the poles, changing into the clothes.
Have you opened it or is it still in the box?
Well, see, I haven't opened it. Lachie said it's okay to open it, but it feels like it's a violation.
No. These are the ones. I wouldn't have got you anything that expensive, Tone. these are the ones you got to open because you've got to display it on your desk at home. Okay.
Right, of course.
Now, the other thing I got you was the bat phone.
From the car,
the Batmobile.
Oh, okay, right.
So you've got to put it in your car.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Okay, and the third thing was a Batarang bottle opener, which is also a fridge magnet.
Yeah.
So very, very handy.
Jeez, multi-purpose.
And I've said to Lachie, you know, because I've been to his place, I'm going, well, surely you can't fit the Southern Hemisphere's largest collection of Batman memorabilia in here.
You've missed someone. Batman and
Robin.
And Robin memorabilia.
But he says that you've got a warehouse. Yeah. And I'm picturing the last shot of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yes. Is that what it's like?
That's not too far off. Right. Yes, except I'm missing my stings. Yeah. But now that I know you've got that in the breach, I'm going to be pointing at you, Mr. Mueller.
Mr. James.
But what is the what's the most prized item in all of it?
Oh, I tell you, from the Danbury Mint in the UK, I have a very limited edition 1940s Batmobile with a little Batman and Robin in it, which I adore.
Wow. 1940s.
How much it's worth, Tone?
No, Tone, you first.
I'll raise that.
Tone.
I'm saying £10,000.
It's turned into an auction.
Sold.
Lachlan?
It's about $600 worth. That
yeah. Now, when you say 1940s, I remember when I was a kid seeing a cereal, like an old style Batman cereal made in the 40s.
There's two from the 40s. There's the 1943.
Right.
Columbia Pictures did them. They had the rights back then. And the 1943 one's really racist.
Really racist. What's Batman doing?
Well, they're Batman and Robin are after an evil Japanese espionage agent because it's the height of the war.
Yeah.
Who's trying to create a race of zombie Japanese worshipping terrorists?
Which that actually later turned into the show Pokemon.
Yes.
And then Robin Sober.
And then Robin. Full circle.
What I remember about those is the costumes were very baggy. Mm. They weren't the form fitting. The eye holes were a bit wonky, never on straight. The ears always slightly bent. The cape getting caught in the door of the Batmobile, which wasn't even a Batmobile.
No.
It was just like a normal car.
It was two cars in one, actually, Tone, because when the hood was down, it was Bruce Wayne's car, and then when the hood would go up, it became the Batmobile.
How cheap is that?
So
what is the first...
And they didn't even drive it. Alfred the Butler drove it for them.
Why would I get an octogenarian to drive me to a crime scene? That would take forever. It's like driving Miss Daisy with the caped crusader in the back, Tone.
It's like that great episode of the TV show where Bruce Wayne and Batman have to appear somewhere at the same time.
Yeah.
So Alfred is sent along
so good.
In the Batman costume.
In the costume.
The best is when old Alfred is doing the wall climb. Have you seen that episode?
No,
oh, boy, that's the slowest wall climb, and those things weren't fast to begin with.
Right, And Ash,
right.
To you.
I don't know much about Batman.
Yours is more Ash-based. Yours is more an Ash-based question.
It's more of an Ash-man question.
Yeah, great.
New deals, buddy. Deals, current deals. Because remember, Tone, there was a number of episodes, and Jay will remember this, where we weren't allowed to mention the secret deal you were doing.
Yeah.
Your new acting job, which of course now can be revealed because it's hit the airwaves.
Absolutely. I'm on Neighbours. I play a gay stripper.
Right.
And I run my own business.
Okay.
It's the role I was born to play.
Surely.
What sort of distance? What kind of arc? How long are you in it for?
Mate, I'm in there for 2 days at the start, and then I'm in for 3 months. Mm. Full time, Tone.
Can we say what happened? This is a testament to Ash's ability because he went along. He was the only one auditioning for the role of, what's his name, your character?
Rory.
Remember. Yeah, Rory. Okay, I'll
I was about to say Jasper, my tickling.
Yet, Ash,
I keep thinking about Jasper, my tickling video character. No, it's Rory. They're very similar.
Lockie, have you ever had that where two characters, you confuse which one you're playing in a show?
No, not until I got into the mindset of Ash Williams. But I've got to tell you something, buddy.
Talk to me.
You know what you've done? You've done the Lockie Hume acting school technique, which is you show up for a couple of days, and at the end of those 2 days, they're building a trophy wall to you, and they don't want you to leave the building.
Yep.
Because that is exactly what's happened here, Tone, because he started as controversial. And what did the director say you were? Sexually...
Cocksure.
Yeah, he said you were...
Cocksure. She kept saying, you're cocksure.
Right.
And I said, I beg your pardon. And she said, it's a real world word. I said, no, it's not.
Yeah.
And I Googled it, and it is. And he is. Very cocksure.
Yeah, I used to work at the ABC with a bloke who was in the music department who had a secret identity where he would write for a magazine called Cocksure.
Really?
He actually wrote for two, one called Ribald and one called Cocksure.
Different types of articles? Could your Ribald article appear in Cocksure?
We were never allowed to see the articles, but Ted Emery, the director of Kath and Kim, told me that bloke there, he just looks like a mild-mannered music arranger, but he had a secret identity and his nickname was Pink Thing. And he wrote articles for Cocksure and Ribald.
So were they articles like, I didn't think this was ever going to happen
to
me?
They were like the letters in Penthouse Forum.
Oh my God, I've got a deal. Okay, off the bat, my manager called me yesterday and said, I pitched you in for Penthouse.
Yes.
Okay.
Penthouse still going?
It's going in Australia. I said, am I going to be nude? She said, no, it's going to be topless and it's going to be a Q&A. And I said, that's fantastic. Let me know when it's going to be happening.
Right. Yeah, we're back. We're back in fantasy land. Hang on a sec. Hang on a sec.
Yeah, penthouse used to be ladies in the nutty.
So, yeah. Hang on. Why is it now actors doing quick question and answer, male actors?
To be honest, it was
shirtless.
We were talking about a lot of deals yesterday, and that wasn't the most important deal. So I kind of just, you know, breezed past that. Uh-huh. And the guy said, look, let's keep talking about the big deals.
What was the biggest one discussed yesterday?
Oh, just whether I should email someone.
It's underwhelming.
No, but you've got to get the time right of the email because you only get one chance.
Right.
Yeah. So do I email in the morning or do you email in the afternoon? And we decided on 4 p.m. I read 4-hour work week and apparently more people are checking their emails at 4 p.m. than any other time.
Is that right?
Already we're ahead, Tony. Okay. Already
and
we're
guess
ahead.
Guess what? I sent it yesterday and I've already got a response. So anyway, go on.
Can we ask you the email was to, Ashley?
No. It's a secret. It's a deal and I can reveal all in about a month.
It's to Home and Away.
Yeah. Does it begin with the words, I never thought this would happen to me? But look, hang on. Okay, so you're going for a couple of days. You're a gay stripper.
Yeah.
But then it's a 3-month extended visit. What are the plot lines? How do they keep the gay stripper around for that long?
Now he's balking because...
That's spoiler alert territory.
It's just, you know...
Absolutely.
I think we can talk about the permanent role that was created for you because it's a character choice, which is fine. That's not in a plot line, Tone. I think we can talk about that.
Right. Oh, yeah. I've become the...
Ed is prompting him. Yeah.
No, I've become the... become the local yoga teacher.
Oh, right.
Hang on, hang on. He's talking it down. From showing up just as sort of, you know, cocksure gay stripper, he has now been elevated to the position of the permanent yoga teacher in Ramsey Street.
And I teach all the big names. Yep. You know, I don't want to go into it, but I teach Susan Kennedy.
Big.
Yep.
A bit of downward dog with Susan. Then
what about Toadie?
He's a Pilates man.
So there's no yoga Toadie.
I tell you what, Toadie, he's a lawyer. Did you know that?
In real life or just on the show?
No, in real life. Bloody good guy.
Where did he find the time?
In real life, he loves to run. Ryan Maloney.
Yeah.
Great guy. Loves to run.
I saw that in the paper.
He's always going for a run. I said, when's your next scene? He said, I'm going for a run. Anyway.
Hang on. What's the name of your character? Is it Gary Cocksure? What have they called you?
Rory Zamiro.
Oh, Rory Zamiro.
Yeah. But can we talk about, about 5 years ago when I was doing the Neighbours thing and I had a role? Yeah. Okay, this is 5 years ago. How's this? I auditioned.
Disaster.
Right? We were doing radio at the time.
Dave and Kate.
With Hughie and Kate. And then I had an audition and it was pretty much mine. My acting agent at the time said, just turn up. Yep. Learn your lines and it's pretty much yours. That morning I said to the guys, I've got a big audition this morning. Yep. It's for Neighbours.
Yeah.
And then I think Hughie said,
let's do it on air. Which is a funny idea.
Yeah, but is that going to help?
And we all played the characters in the audition. So Hughie was playing Harold. Yep. Ed, you were playing Susan.
I was Bouncer.
And Kate, of course, would be perfect at this because she used to write for Neighbours.
That's right.
Well, and then I did the audition, went really well. Got a call from my agent in the afternoon.
Yeah.
He said, what the hell did you do on radio this afternoon or this morning?
Really?
And he said...
Secret sound. What?
He said, Neighbours heard it. You've given away storyline that's 3 months in the future and you're banned from Neighbours.
Oh, wow. Wow.
For life. It was a life ban. And my agent dropped me. Big shout out to James, if you're listening.
Yeah. And, James, where are you now, mate?
Yeah.
You're not living high after another.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable.
Wow.
That's a beat. Yeah. That's
who's
our first beat.
Laughing now that Julian Zamiro or whatever his name is.
Julian Zamiro. Are you doing Julian Assange and Julian Zamiro all at once? I think that's what you're doing.
You mentioned that the character is gay. So there's a gay storyline. Who was procuring the services of a gay male escort / stripper?
Oh, whoa. No, you've added the escort.
Okay, I just wanted to spice things up a bit.
No one here said escort.
Because I never thought this would happen to me. But
Rory, the thing is, Rory could be bisexual. We need to remember that. He loves to get involved.
Because he's cocksure.
That's something you've added, though, isn't it? A bisexual backstory.
You know why? Because I was thinking I might want to be on Neighbours for a couple of years, so I was always trying to flirt with the girls, and then sometimes the director would say, that's great, I don't even know if you're gay anymore. And I'm like, exactly.
Oh, right, so you sort of leave your options open, like when Andrew Clark was on Sons and Daughters in the 80s. Rapist for the first few episodes, then lovable friend of everyone.
Yeah, then we move on from there. Yeah,
just completely forgot about the rape.
Well, it's much like Lockie Hume's accent in Offspring. No one remembers what it used to be. Let's just worry about what it is today.
You've got to remember, my character in Offspring was from outer space.
No, I know.
So, okay,
know.
He was making it up as he goes.
Hey, hang on. You've mentioned, someone mentioned Kate Langbrook writing for Neighbours. Mm-hmm. Lockie Hume, is it not true that you wrote an episode of Acropolis Now?
I did. That's
what the some sort of sting, something. Has Rex Hunt got any thoughts on that? That's shocking.
Tell you how that came about. Remember?
So the pipe will be on the juice at the piano bar. Yeah. Goodness gracious me, pipe. Get home to your family.
Thank you, Rex.
Thank you, Rexmond. Yeah, remember Alexi Vellis in the film Nirvana Street Murder?
Alexi Vellis, the acting coach.
Is he an acting coach?
He was my first ever acting coach.
He was the director of The Wog Boy, the movie.
Yeah, well, that's why I went to him. And honestly,
that's why I went to him, because I was losing roles to Greeks nonstop.
But this was when I was 18 or 19, and I used to go to Alexi's school every Tuesday or Wednesday night, and I stopped going because he would just smoke, you know, and just tell stories. I mean, we weren't doing any acting.
Yeah.
And, anyway, go on. Anyway, Alexi,
so he directed a film called Nirvana Street Murder with Mendo.
I had written a feature film when I was about 18.
Right.
Sold it to Rosa Colosimo.
Oh, yes.
And she showed me Nirvana Street Murder, and I said, that's the guy I want to direct my movie. Okay. So she introduced me to Alexi, who then cast me in a short film that he was doing, and then he was being hired by Nick and Simon Palomares and so on and so forth to write Acropolis Now. So he got me a job when I was about 19, 20.
Wow.
So I took my paycheck from that and wrote a play and put a show on.
Yeah, right.
And et cetera, et cetera.
But tell us about writing. Well, like, what was the writing meeting like for Acropolis
Now?
Well,
I'd never been in one.
Right.
And so I didn't know you actually had to bring ideas to the table.
Right.
So that was a bit of a learning curve. But I had a bit of a rough time on it because they gave me my writing assignment for the episode. And I went away and wrote it, thought it was pretty schmick. I'd never, you know, been paid to write
And you
before.
Have to have all the characters, Effie,
yep, and all
Memo.
That. Yep. It was the last season, so we had the Nikki Vent character and we had the Georgie Parker character.
Oh, right.
Who was originally envisioned as in the Greek comedy style of an overbearing fat woman, but the network decided to cast Georgie Parker.
Right, you've got to change that up.
Yep. You know, always thinking outside the box at Channel 7.
Yep.
God bless you
so
all.
So they didn't have her sort of in a black dress going, when you got the marry a nice boy?
You know who directed my episode?
Francis Ford Coppola.
Bud Tingwell.
Oh, Bud Tingwell.
So you go. Jesus. And that's how I met Bud.
Yeah, so can I just say, when you're dangling the fluffy dice, make sure.
I'm just trying to picture Bud Tingwell in the milieu of
Acropolis Now.
Well, because it was like three camera shoot and all kind of stuff in the studio. But anyway, I submitted my script and they said, look, not good enough. We're going to have to put another one of the writers on with you. We're going to have to dock your pay for it. So Ray Bosley was another one of the writers, came on board, and he really taught me a lot of stuff about structure and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I think at the end of the day, I had about two gags of mine that made it to where.
Still, two gags in Acropolis Now that went to air, which was a big hit, Tone, as we know.
It was.
It was a good show back in the day. I've known Nick Giannopoulos and Simon Palomares and George Kapaniaris and all those guys since, a little teenage boy.
You could show up in Wogs in Work. You could be.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yeah.
I could.
As a walk-on.
I can get you free tickets to that too, by the way, if you
fantastic.
Want.
Fantastic. How are you getting free hits?
I know the publicist. He emails me all the time.
See,
with free
kids,
things.
You're learning. This is how you get free tickets
you know
to
what?
Stuff.
Okay? We don't usually do giveaways on this podcast, I will do a double.
Yep, it's a double pass.
Phone this podcast now.
No, email me.
Give us the email, mate. The official email.
Use info. info@ashwilliams.com.au. That's the oldest email I have, but it's reliable.
Pro tip, email 4:00 in the afternoon.
No.
I'm always on it. Send it to me.
I'm just picturing that account at 4:00. It's like, bling, ATO. ATO. Compliance.
But how do they get it? Is it just first in best dressed?
No. Well, first in best dressed. So give that email again.
With the answer to this question.
Oh, yep.
Okay. What is the name of the episode of Acropolis Now that Lockie Hume and Ray Bosley wrote together?
That's wonderful.
Hard.
Well, they
another pro tip. Tony Martin would have already had that up on the IMDb by the time this podcast is over.
Well, I remember when, because I actually weirdly got asked to direct Here Come the Habibs.
I know that.
Did
when
you?
It was in the early stages.
Yes.
Wow. And it was just as well I didn't, because there was a lot of complaints that there weren't enough quote unquote wogs involved in the creative team.
Oh, but you're a wog.
I guess I'm a
New Zealander.
We're the forgotten wogs, the New Zealanders. but what I remember is everyone was saying to me, I'm going, oh, is it going to be like Acropolis Now? They're going, no. It's going to be much more nuanced. It's going to be almost a dramedy.
Oh, okay.
We're not going to have the normal cliches.
Great.
Now, I can't speak for the people who made the show, but I remember when the first episode went to air, the Channel 9 promo went, the shish kebab is about to hit the fan.
Yeah. Take the afternoon off, everybody. Yeah, they would nail this.
No cliches on board.
I would just have loved to have seen you directing burnouts and that type of thing. That would have really made
me
laugh.
Skid mark jokes.
Yeah, that would, that would have really made me laugh. Tone, let's stay with you.
Yes.
The book, The Deadly Kerfuffle. I'm up to page 70. Tone, Hume, you finished it, but don't
I finished
stop
it this morning.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, no, okay, no spoiler alert, but it is excellent. And Tone, I really want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
It is laugh out loud funny,
it
and
is.
There are some genuine jaw-dropper moments where you go, oh, my God.
Okay. There's a few twists and turns towards the end.
I do want to read this bit to you because I feel like there's a. It's about, you know, a confused terror plot with a New Zealand family. People think they're Pakistani.
Yep.
They're going to rotate their house to face Mecca.
That's right.
Which was a rumour that went around New Zealand when
really
you were a kid.
Happening in a town I lived in.
Which is such a funny idea.
Know,
even back
the
then.
The pipes, the electricity.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's not easy to just turn your house on its axis.
It's very, very difficult if the block has taught us anything. And I just want to read this because I keep, as I'm reading it, there's AM radio jocks in it. There's also, it's very, you know, contemporary and characters that you sort of recognize. This is a description of Spence is the name. I'll start with Spence is the name. Julian Spence, who's the AM talkback person who's in
who's
in the book. Okay. Spence's long time, in brackets, 8 months, producer, a man whose hypnotist style pointy beard was counterbalanced by a truly misguided ponytail. Now, that is a face I can picture straight away.
It might be someone who works here, actually.
Ah, now I did. How much of, because the descriptions are very, very funny, and how many of these sort of people are you drawing from people that you knew?
I'm just getting details. Like the announcer has a diamond microphone.
Yes.
And that's because I remember being in a studio like we're in here now.
Yeah.
And John Laws was in the next studio. And I actually saw two blokes wheel in a sort of a wooden box. And they were wearing dust coats and cotton gloves. And they opened it up. And inside was like velvet lining. Out came the gold microphone.
You are kidding
that
me.
John Laws
and it had a serial
into.
Number on it. JL001
yes,
or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
There was, and, you know, no one else could speak into the gold microphone.
And then they would take it back out in the dust coats.
Wow. For the golden tonsils.
That's right, because
did it affect
words,
the sound? Did it affect the sound in any way?
Kyle Sandilands have a gold microphone?
He's got a gold.
Yep.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, if everyone has one, it's not special, is it?
Yeah, you've got to sort of take it up a notch.
I wonder if Sandilands is JL002.
Sandilands is starting to look more and more like Santa.
Yeah, well, he is looking more Santa-esque.
He's like sort of son of Brian Dennehy look.
Do you know what would be a great
he's
look?
Very Dennehy.
If he left, a funny look would be if they, because they often do like little doorstops with him as he's leaving the studio to ask him about something that happened, right? It'd be great if closer to Christmas he came out reindeers dragging a sleigh, but not in a Santa suit, just as himself. That's a, that would be a funny look. That's for free, Kyle, if you'd like it. That is for free. Back to you, Ash. If I asked you who's the best, which of this, it's all today is all about the best ever.
Mm-hmm.
If I asked you your best ever movie villain, who would you say?
Wow.
I start with you because the other two are going to develop a list, which is fairly lengthy
you
in
know
your
what?
Mind.
It's an easy answer. Scar from The Lion King.
Yeah, what a bastard.
What a prick.
That's a good one.
That's the mean lion.
Is that Jeremy Irons? Was
yeah,
he the voice
it was Jeremy
of
Irons.
He's just...
Jay?
Hannibal.
Hannibal Lecter.
But he's quite an anti-hero because he helps our heroine solve the case.
Well... Yeah, but he's conflicted because he wants to eat her.
That's true.
That's right.
Haven't we all been there?
And he is wearing people's faces at various
points. Yeah, that is that as well. But if that rules you out, Tone.
Well, Alan Rickman in the first Die Hard is a...
I had that
Hans
written down.
Gruber.
It's kind of an obvious one, but it's hard to go past.
It's really hard to go past. I heard an interesting story of a scene they cut out the other day. You know when they're going through and Bruce Willis is starting to kill off the terrorists, but there starts to be a bit of confusion as to who's a hostage and who's a terrorist. And there's one shot where he looks down at the wrist of one of the terrorists, and he's got a particular watch on. And then later on, when he's confronting Rickman, and Rickman's going, "Oh, I'm a hostage, etc." Oh, yeah.
That's a great scene. Reckon?
Yeah. He does. There is a bit of a shot or a look towards Rickman's watch that Bruce Willis recognizes, and it was part of a sequence that they shot at the start, where in order so that the filmmakers say, "Oh, listen, these guys are all the terrorists." At the start, they go synchronize watches, and they all put their hands in,
and they've all got the same,
watch, which is something that Bruce Willis recognizes. But there was a problem they had because in the background, there was an ambulance because they shot it out of sequence lock, which meant that it gave away the fact that something was going wrong. So they couldn't have an ambulance out the front of the Takahashi building at the start of the film.
Yeah, whereas now they could just paint the
ambulance.
That's
right. But then, so they had to cut that shot, which, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey.
Lachlan?
Well, you know, you think Darth Vader. You think
I do think Darth Vader.
Characters like that. But really, to me, Michael Corleone in The Godfather Part 2.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
But when he's gone really bad.
Into the seventh level of hell, when his paranoia and his evilness, that incredible exchange where he puts his stepbrother Tom Hagen down.
Mm.
You know, you can take your wife and your mistress and your family and you can move to Las Vegas. And then when Tom Hagen says to him, "Do you feel we need to wipe out everybody?" And he says, "I don't feel the need to wipe out everybody, Tom, just my enemies, that's all." And
you know, that's actually a speech that Rory makes when he arrives in.
But he's sucking the orange. Now, do you know the story about the significance of the oranges in the Godfather
Ash
trilogy?
I've only seen Scarface, but you go...
There's much less in the way of citrus fruit in Scarface.
Even though it is set in Miami.
Yeah.
The orange is the symbol of death in the Godfather trilogy. Whoever comes in contact with an orange will die, will be a traitor. For example, when the Godfather is being the assassination attempt on him, he is buying oranges at the fruit stand and the oranges chase him across the street as he's running. Okay, when we first meet Tessio at the wedding, the first thing shot you see is an orange being tossed up in the air and captured. In Godfather 2, when Johnny Ola, Hyman Roth's messenger boy, comes to the Tahoe estate, he gives Michael an orange and Michael says, "What's this?" He says, "It's a gift from our friend in Miami." It's Roth who's behind the assassination attempt on Michael. By the climax, Michael is eating the orange when he says, "I'm going to wipe out everybody."
And of course, Marlon Brando whops the orange in the mouth.
That whops the orange in the eye and dies. And the last shot of Godfather 3, Michael is holding the orange in the courtyard and it drops out of his hand and dies.
Is that true that they did the same thing in Acropolis Now with olives?
That is. And feta.
That is why, to this day, members of the Mafia are terrified by those ads for the fresh fruit people.
Get out of here. Curtis Stone, he's after us. Yes, Ash.
I remember when I used to live next door to you, I asked you, what are your top 20 favourite films, because I'm going to watch them in order.
That would have been a long night.
Then you said, I'll get back. You reeled off the top 10 in a second, and the top 10 to 20, you said, I'll get back to you.
You know, my top 10's changed, Ash.
Has it? Yes. But Godfather would still be number one, I reckon.
Yeah, Godfather 1 and Godfather 2.
Go 10 to 1.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, I'm still working on my list, actually, because after many years, I took The Deer Hunter out, which sat at number 7 on my list.
Why was that? Did you watch it again and it wasn't as good?
I watched it and I realised, having done some more reading on Michael Cimino, the writer-director, the infamous writer-director of it, when he passed away recently, at age unknown.
Very strange
face. And gender unknown.
But please Google image Michael Cimino.
Spelling tone?
C-I-M-I-N-O.
Correct.
And Michael?
there's a B in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
You went off.
Because if you go back, and I love The Deer Hunter, but I went off him because I realised the whole drawn out wedding sequence that opens The Deer Hunter, the traditional wedding sequence, he's trying to top Coppola from the beginning of The Godfather. You know, sometimes when you just have it clicks and you go, I see what you're up to.
And
you suddenly see everything differently.
That's it.
You know what I mean?
And so
out of the top 10.
That threw everything out.
Okay.
And so I started having to think, what's going to replace? It took
Encino
me a long time.
Man.
the computer wore tennis shoes.
Oh, it's very good. Best of the Dexter Riley trilogy.
The Shaggy DA.
oh, my God.
So just quickly, because you have
Well, I'll give you my top five, and that is never changed. Godfather 2.
Check.
Are we going 5 to 1 here?
No, top 1 to 5.
You got to go 5 to 1. Okay.
No, I'm too late now. I'm off and running. The Conversation.
Yep.
Also by Coppola.
Made between the two Godfathers.
That's right. Serpico.
Yep.
Great.
All the President's Men. And my beautiful friend Tony, of course, just sent me the new beautiful Blu-ray transfer of All the President's Men with this fantastic new documentary.
That's right, on the second disc.
They're all reunited again, the whole cast and blah, blah, blah.
And away
Thank you so much, Tom.
Well, Ash, so hang on. All of your top five are like from the same sort of three-year period.
Yeah.
And see, another good one from around there is Dog Day Afternoon.
But that's not even in my top 20.
Wow. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, but okay. Number six is The French Connection. So you see, it's still in that group.
Last question on this. Now, that fifth movie, what's that about?
All the President's Men. Yeah. Okay, it's the true story of the Watergate scandal. The two journalists, Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein.
Ash is going to tell you what the Watergate story is.
Well, no. I don't know. But I thought... okay. I don't know, mate.
He's our very own Wikipedia.
Ash has got a lot on, mate.
No, because I thought it would be mafia. Because you love mafia stuff.
Good crime.
Yeah, Serpico mafia.
Serpico's police corruption.
Oh, okay. Fair play. On to you, Ed.
Tone, top five?
Some
favourites.
Singing in the Rain is in there.
Yeah, great.
With Null and I would be up there.
Yeah, great film.
Spinal Tap would be up there.
Yes.
See, the problem area that we're in is you've got five best and then you've got five favourite and they're never necessarily
That's fair
this,
enough,
You know what
Tone.
I mean?
Yeah,
Midnight Run, as everyone knows.
Yeah,
that's
see,
in
Midnight
my,
Run floats in and out.
That'd be in
my
top 10
okay.
of enjoyable, but is it like one of the top 10 best films?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, Ash? Any in your top 10?
Do you know any, Ash, quick question first. Do you recognise the titles of any of the movies that we've said so far?
I know Godfather.
Okay.
Yeah, it's that one. Number one for me, Scarface. I fucking love that film.
Which version?
There's only one version, isn't there?
No, there's two.
No, don't worry about that. Yeah,
The one with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
But a movie to avoid.
Yeah.
I watched all of it. I was so bored on Saturday. Grown Ups 2.
Oh, not living up to the high standards of Grown Ups 1.
I just thought, look, I'm going to give it.
I'm going to give it three watches. but that's funny because you don't mind a sequel. How much do you? What's one of your favourite movies, which is a sequel?
Oh, Problem Child 2.
He loves Problem Child 2.
Oh yes, right.
Yeah, yeah.
What a ripper!
What a ripper!
With Gilbert Gottfried, he's in there somewhere.
Yes, yeah.
Absolutely. Good movie.
And you love Clifford as well.
I love Clifford.
Oh, Clifford has got a real cult
good
following.
Good movie.
Yeah, good movie. It's a hard one to recommend because it's not for everybody.
And what's it about, Jake? Just as you hear, any favorites of yours?
My favorite of all time is Rear Window.
Oh,
really?
Wow, and that's my favorite Hitchcock.
Good call.
That's my favorite Hitchcock.
And my other favorite is Raising Arizona.
Coen Brothers. Yeah, fantastic.
But of all the favorite Coen Brothers films.
I like Miller's Crossing. That's a particularly good one.
It's my least favorite.
I love Miller's Crossing.
Really? Can't get into it. I even read the script because I'm like, I must be wrong. And I'm like, I probably am, but I can't get around it. Big Lebowski though, Ash.
Great film.
Bit of fun, eh?
The Russian drink. I love that.
The White Russian.
White Russian.
Yeah. Cool. Hey, have you ever been out with a lady that likes a White Russian?
Absolutely. I went out with a girl for lunch in Los Angeles who was a Russian.
So a long-term kind of thing?
No, it was just one date. And then, but she was great. She was great. I miss her. Yeah.
If you're listening, call the podcast now.
Call the hotline. Hey, Jay, can we set
Email
up a hotline?
At 4 p.m.
Could we, if we did, is there some way we could set up a hotline where people could leave us messages? Like if we got a burner mobile phone, people could leave the Team Effort messages, couldn't they?
We could maybe even create like a Team Effort WhatsApp.
Oh, now you're being interesting. Wow. We'll talk to the tech department.
We'll get on it.
Yep. We'll talk to them.
Ed, what are your favorite movies?
Well, With Nail and I, it's very close to the top. Empire Strikes Back.
You like
Lebowski? Can't get enough.
Apocalypse Now.
And Apocalypse Now.
Yes.
But not Redux.
No, Redux is terrible.
I hate Redux.
I got a great star-struck showbiz story about Redux.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When I first got to San Francisco, and this is just one of those...
Start of a song.
Well,
when I
for the Matrix sequels.
Here we go.
And so I finally get to meet Lawrence Fishburne.
Fishburne.
No, Lawrence.
Friends. Okay.
No, no, it's
okay.
Lawrence.
Okay,
believe
Lawrence
me.
Fishburne. Lawrence. Okay. Sorry, Larry, if you're listening.
Fish.
Okay, Fish. Okay.
So,
yep.
So I'm so starstruck and so nervous. Okay. Yeah. And this guy's a movie star.
He sure is.
And Redux is about to be coming out in cinemas.
Oh goodness.
And so we're sitting there, and I go, gee whiz, have you seen Apocalypse Now Redux yet? And he goes, no, I'm going to Francis's place this weekend to watch it.
Mm,
and that's when you go, yeah. It's a whole different
It's a life, isn't it?
You know what,
I mean?
Going to Francis Coppola's
It's like going to Ash's place to watch Grown Ups 2 Tone.
But I remember with, you know, because in Apocalypse Now, Brando is sort of, he's in darkness.
Yeah.
There's a light bulb swings and you see part of his face and he's sort of washing the top of his head with it. And it's all very mysterious and enigmatic.
Yeah.
And then in Redux, there's a scene in broad daylight. And you just go, who's that fat bloke wandering around in pyjamas?
Yeah.
Like all of the mystery of Kurtz, it's gone.
Demystified.
It's like starting Perfect Match with the door back.
Oh,
we wouldn't do that, Ash, would you?
Well, that's I like that as a show.
Perfect Match.
Perfect Match.
I loved Perfect
Match. With Dexter.
Yeah.
Dexter. The robot, not the serial killer.
No.
It would be an interesting
episode.
It's
a very different show now. With Greg Evans and Dexter. Dexter, what have you done to contestant number two?
No, they're gaffer taped to a table.
He can't speak with the gaffer tapes in his mouth about what his favourite date would be. Oh, my God. We haven't even got to half of page one of my notes, so we are going to have to go away and come back here in the team effort. Jay, as we glide, hopefully, towards episode two, what have we learnt?
A few things. We've learned the definition of cocksure, which is confident in an excessive or arrogant way.
Yes.
So that's
Is that Rory, mate?
That's Rory.
Definitely Rory.
Yeah, it's Rory.
He's sexually aggressive.
Good acting choice.
He's sexually aggressive.
Yeah. Good timing for that to be character trait, isn't it?
I was going to say. Yes.
The example that the definition, the dictionary online gives you is that the cocksure golf prodigy from California.
That's
fairly random.
So a sexually aggressive golf prodigy?
Yeah. Tiger Woods.
There you go.
Michael Cimino. If you do Google image this guy, he's gone through some looks, but he eventually settled on one look in particular, and that could be a good look for Rory.
Oh, yeah. The look he settled on was late period Michael Jackson. And he started looking like a he looked like an older Zach Braff with a very sort of round pumpkin style head.
What a great description.
I'm sure he was wearing a wig, Phil Spector style.
Yes. And there was talk that he was possibly transitioning.
That's what I said. He died of age and gender indeterminate. Because he lied about his age his whole career.
He was born in 1939, died in 2016. Well,
that's the end of that. That's the end of that mystery.
And gender? Does it say?
It does not say.
No.
It's
always going to be a mystery.
Yep.
Okay.
If you want a clue for the challenge that Lockie and Ash have given out,
which
is named the episode of Lockie's episode of Acropolis Now, it is on IMDb. The blank.
You would have put it there.
I'm just going to guess.
You would have put it there.
I'm going to guess. Is it every wog has its day? No.
Wog day afternoon?
Sleeping wogs lie?
No.
Effie?
No.
Think religious.
No.
Think religious.
No. Yes. info@ashwilliams.com.au is where you can put that in. John Law's microphone was a one-off Sennheiser valued at $9,800 with the serial number JL0001.
Aha, so we're zero off.
That's
Who looks foolish now?
Finally, you mentioned Grown Ups 2. Grown Ups 2 took in $247 million.
I know.
They nailed.
Compare that to Nirvana's Street Murder, which took $126,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Compare that to Prey, the film by George Miller, the other George Miller, which on its opening weekend, I believe, took in $350.
Are you sure that it's the other George Miller?
Or is it the George? No, I think it is the other George Miller.
I don't think it's any George Miller, is it? Is it?
I think it's a George Miller.
It's with Natalie Bassingthwaite?
Yes, it is.
You better check that one.
350?
Big ones. Ducks. Yep.
Because there's George Miller who did Mad Max.
Then there's the other George
and
Miller.
Then there's the other George Miller, the other George Miller was always rather contemptuously referred to in Film Comment magazine as the wrong George Miller.
The wrong George Miller, which was the original title of The Wrong Girl on Channel 10.
But the wrong George Miller did do the original Neverending Story.
And
good film.
Did Man from Snowy River, one of the most profitable Australian films.
There you go, Jay.
And also, he didn't do Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man. We're going into overtime.
There'll be letters.
Okay, I just remembered something about Harley Davidson. I remembered this story 5 days ago. I completely forgot it ever happened to me. And
can we tease it for episode 2?
Yeah, we can.
We're going to sizzle.
Yeah, it's the first time a podcast has ever had a tease, but it's the first thing that's happening in the next episode of the team effort is Ash Williams' Harley Davidson story.
That I forgot for 6 years, and it dropped into my brain 5 days ago. Don't go anywhere.
Oh, wow. We are back shortly. Yep.